Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the show and subscribing on iTunes. The comments on the iTunes page, you guys are the shit, man. So many new comments. If you haven't taken 2 seconds yet to rate the podcast on the iTunes page with a 5-star rating, please do so. It takes 2 seconds. And if you really enjoy the podcast, man, it makes such a world of difference to us when you can leave that in comment form on the iTunes page. Not only does it make us feel good and give us some sort of an indication that what we're doing is hitting a nerve with you guys in a positive way, but it helps us climb the charts, and that's just good on all fronts. So continue to subscribe on iTunes. Tell your friends to get all past episodes at aboutlastnightpodcast.com. And keep rating and commenting on that iTunes page, baby. Wow, the amount of tweets and emails I received from the birthday episode. Holy shit, you guys may be forcing me into drinking for the next handful of episodes. I didn't realize how entertaining it was going to be. I was in a great place, I want to say. Brad and I had pitched our show that day. I had done Hyundai in the morning, so, you know, start the day by making some money. You pitch a show, you know, watch the Cavs finals game. I hadn't watched any of the finals games all the way through yet, so I finally got to sit down and watch one at Brad's place. Ubered over there, so I started drinking, went to the Laugh Factory, did Kevin Nealon's show. That was a blast, and I was just feeling good, and I was the right amount of drunk to where I wasn't incoherent, but I definitely was, as you heard, having a difficult time stringing together fucking really great sentences. But I had a good time, and I'm glad it translated, because, shit, I have not seen that type of a response in a while, and I guess that means I'm going to have to stock up at Bevmo pretty soon. Anyway, the podcast was a blast. Today's episode is no different. Today's episode, our guest is an incredible story. We've had some interviews that have really inspired me out of nowhere. This one, I didn't totally understand the magnitude of his story. Our guest is Bald Brian. Brian Bishop from the Adam Carolla podcast. Great dude. Hilarious dude. Been with Carolla for a handful of years now. Crushing it over there. And he was diagnosed with a brain tumor and I think 6 months to live about, man, a handful, 3-4 years ago. I know that's not completely accurate. You'll hear the exact time frame in the podcast. But he's been living with it for a decent amount of time now, and I mean, it's just crazy, man. A brain tumor, it's not something you ever think about as a possibility, and we really get into it, man. And you know, it's a comedy podcast, so we keep it light, but it's a heavy story, man. But an interesting story, an uplifting story, an inspiring story, and the motherfucker's living and he's killing it, and he came by to give us the whole story. And you guys are really going to enjoy it. It's a great story to hear and makes it step back and really appreciate life in a new light, because not often do you get to run into people that you know personally, and you guys will feel like that after you listen to Brian talk, because he's that cool and conversational. And he was also a contestant on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which is one of my favorite shows, if you didn't know that. The Regis version, though. He was on the Meredith Vieira version. Not as cool, but still, you know, quite the unique experience. That show is hilarious and amazing to me all at the same time. He shares that story, obviously the brain tumor story, how he got the gig on Carolla. It's a really great episode. I gotta be honest, it's one of my favorites. I know you guys are gonna love it. So let's not waste any more time. Follow Bald Brian on Twitter at Bald Brian. And of course, subscribe to the Adam Carolla podcast to hear him, you know, every week. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Brad Williams will be performing in Valley Center, California at Harris Casino, June 26th, baby, 9 p.m. Go see Brad. Get your tickets at Harris.com. And then, of course, July 2nd in San Diego, California, Brad will be performing at the Observatory Theater in San Diego, California, July 2nd, 8 p.m. Go see Brad in San Diego. Then, of course, July 3rd, a day before our nation's independence, Brad and myself will be at the Irvine Improv in Irvine, California, 7:30 and 9:45. Irvine Improv, July 3rd. Come see us. Two shows that night. Get your tickets at improv.com. Then, of course, July 9th through the 11th, Madison, Wisconsin, Brad will be at Comedy Club on State. An awesome club. Like I said last time, book me. I want to go. I hear it's a great time. Brad loves it. He always crushes it. He'll be there July 9th through the 11th, Madison, Wisconsin, Comedy Club on State. Go see him. I will be in Scottsdale, Arizona this weekend, baby, at the new Laugh Factory, Scottsdale, Arizona, June 25th through the 28th. Get your tickets at laughfactory.com and come laugh with me, man. I'm really pumped. Arizona's a great comedy city, and the Laugh Factory is one of my favorite clubs in the world, so I know it's going to be a great time. So come see me, Scottsdale Laugh Factory, June 25th to the 28th. And then, of course, I'll be coming home, Bellevue, Washington, the Parlor Live, July 9th through the 11th. Get your tickets at parlorlive.com. And, of course, estoymerchandise.com, baby. That site's up. It's running. It's stocked full of ALN merch. Rony and the Quave shirts, Rony and the Quave mugs, Titanic shirts, Titanic mugs, ALN shirts. Get your merch, man. Support the pod. We love the comments on the iTunes page. Take it up a notch. Get some merch. Support your family. Wear it to a wedding. Wear it to a circumcision. Wear it to a fucking bachelorette party. Come on, ladies. Enough with the dick straws. Get the ALN shirts. Make a change. Better your life. Get all that stuff at estoymerchandise.com and support the podcast that way. And of course, Brad and I's albums on our websites, adamraytv.com. Pick up a copy of my album, Pop-Tart Suicide. A bunch of material that I think will make you laugh. And a bonus song at the end. And of course, Brad Williams has his albums, Hi-Ho and Coming Up Short, on bradwilliamscomedy.com. That's all the CD info. That's all the merch info. That's the tour date info. Those are the Twitter handles. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy a very special, hilarious episode of the About Last Night podcast with our buddy, Bald Brian.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to a dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. It's about last night.
Finally, someone that knows about the headphones.
You would be shocked how many people in our studio do the thing where they got the headphones flipped up and they're trying to get it on. And it's like this one's like up here and they're like trying to, like, you never put on a fucking pair of headphones.
It's headphones. It's not, you know what I mean? It's pouring piss out of a boot and and instructions are on the bottom.
It's remarkable.
Not hard to do.
I also love how you're just taking control of that mic like it's the first. You know what? I'm sorry to make a dick sucking joke right off the bat, but it's impossible for any guest to adjust a mic without making it look. Also, the mic is just so phallic looking already.
I feel like I could go a lot farther with the dick sucking routine.
Please, yeah.
No, I said I could, didn't say I would.
Oh, I mean, damn.
Bonus content. Well, be on the website.
Well, I mean, you brought beer, so I'm getting a little liquored up. So if you do that, who knows what will happen?
Yeah, you brought a jug of beer that, no joke, is about, I don't know, 2 inches shorter than Brad.
Yeah, that's true. It's a big jug of beer. But
Brad, what would happen, by the way, if you drank?
Death.
Yeah.
Just instant death.
And it's also, what, 7.3% alcohol, so it's not.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's a beer.
Okay. All right.
Are you a big beer drinker?
I am. Yeah. Beer. I'm not actually. You know what? I'm not a beer snob because nothing is better. I was just in La Quinta. My wife's family has a house out there, and we were out there for Memorial Day weekend.
I thought you were bragging about staying at the La Quinta Inn.
And no.
Like,
we were staying at our private residence, and it was pool time. It was 95 degrees. Nothing better than poolside beers, Bud Light by the pool, and tailgating at USC game.
I have to agree with that. I have to agree with that because it's light enough, enough, and yes, I sound like a Bud Light commercial, but it really is.
But if you're in it for the long haul, if you're day drinking, like your drinking day extends,
you can have seven
hours,
or eight and not even realize what happened.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Or in Brad's case, you can crack open a beer and you can watch your friends have a good time.
I get drunk very quickly.
Yeah, his nickname is Two Beer Brad.
That was one of the first first real symptom that I knew that something was wrong with me. I was diagnosed, for your listeners who don't know, I was diagnosed with cancer in 2009, and one of the symptoms that really drove home, man, you've got a problem, wasn't the loss of balance at the gym. It wasn't the numbness around the lips. It wasn't the numbness.
You just shook that off, huh?
I chalked that up. I was working morning radio at the time, and I chalked that up to, I'm not getting enough sleep.
No sleep,
which
no one gets doing morning radio.
Exactly.
Boy, how often
do
we brush aside? Like, I guess also, nobody wants to think they're ever really sick, right?
Yeah.
And so,
and I was relatively healthy. I was going to the gym every day after work. So I'm like, well, how bad could it be?
Mm-hmm. But everyone's got their own system of, like, how many times do I notice numbness and faintness in a row to where some right. You just have to not be an idiot about.
Yeah.
All right. You know, 3 days is probably.
Yeah. So 3 months passed.
Oh God.
But the thing that drove it home was I went out drinking with some friends again. Bud Light. I was drinking. Yeah. I think two or three. I was maybe on my third Bud Light over the course of an evening. It wasn't a bender. And I got up to go to the bathroom. It was as though I had had 8 or 9. I was just. I fell over. I fell off the couch trying to get up, and I was like. I was in a fraternity at USC. I'm not. Three Bud Lights is not posing an insurmountable problem.
Yeah.
But this was like, oh, something's wrong.
So would you be willing to write Bud Light and say, Bud Light, you helped diagnose cancer?
Indirectly, you saved my life.
I'm pretty sure you could do that because that would make one hell of a commercial.
I mean, no, talking about just tugging at the heartstrings.
I mean, the binge drinking was really Anheuser-Busch loves to do that. They have like the people slow clapping the soldiers walking to the airport and then the dog at the last Super Bowl ad.
Yep.
They love to get you to cry. So it's just. Zoom in on you holding an ice cold Bud Light and just staring at it longingly going, you know, Bud Light saved my life.
Yep. It's up for anything. It has guys running away from Pac-Man. It has guys fucking bungee jumping. It has me in an MRI tube.
Finishing chemo. Bud Light, you might have cancer. All right. Well, let's write them a Facebook message after this podcast.
Absolutely. And you wrote all about your experiences in your book that is now out on paperback.
Correct.
Called Shrinkage.
Yes.
And so how much was this you trying to get your story out and wanting to get your story out? And how much was this you just trying to keep up with Corolla that writes a new book every year?
What mostly is funny, people ask, like, why did you write the book? And I said, because an agent tracked me down and said, how would you like to write a book? And I said, absolutely.
No kidding. How does that happen, though?
Remember Teresa Strasser, our old co-host on the Adam Carolla Show? She wrote a book called Exploiting My Baby. Very funny book. Her agent sent me a copy of the book with his business card and said, hey man, I'm a fan of the show. I like your story's amazing. Give me a call and we'll talk about, you know, maybe a book deal or something like that. Called him up and he said, you're interested in writing a book? And I was like, nah, not really. And he goes, I think we can sell it. And he's like, absolutely. Absolutely, I'm interested in writing a book.
Dollar sign.
Yeah. As soon as you hear that, I mean, don't get me wrong. We all know that Corolla pays you enough that you have a Scrooge McDuck vault of gold
spinning it out into an arch.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. But
how early on did your story get brought up on the Corolla Show?
Oh, right away. I announced my diagnosis. Boy, I want to say it was within a week of actually getting diagnosed.
And this is in 2009?
This is April 2009.
Yeah, so this is while he's doing the terrestrial radio show.
Oh, no. They just flipped formats. He had just started doing...
Okay.
He was still doing the podcast pretty much out of his house at this point. He was just starting it up and only been doing it for a month or a month and a half.
Yeah.
And then had transitioned it over to his warehouse, where it is today, but in a much, much, much smaller, scaled back form. It was just a room in his warehouse before he built the studio you guys know now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just to go back a minute, so the Bud Light stuff, so all that builds up to you going to the doctor to be like, hey man, I'm getting too drunk off of
pretty much. What happened initially was, you know, I said to Christy, my wife, fiance at the time, I said, honey, I got bad news for you. I know you got laid off your job literally yesterday.
God.
And I'm out of work also, and we're getting married in 2 months.
Whoa.
I'm sick. There's something really wrong with me. And I told her what was going on, and I hadn't told her anything at that point, which communication is the key to a good relationship.
Sure, absolutely.
But that's like freaky news to bring up.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're getting married, and I'm sure she's stressing over things about the wedding, so you don't want to be like, by the way, it's all back on me now.
Bachelorette and bachelor party still to come. I mean, it's all, you know, this is all the whole thing's, you know, the wheels are in motion. We're past the point of no return.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has a good family friend who's a surgeon at St. John's. There's a hospital out here in Santa Monica. And he sort of, you know, I had tried to get appointments with a neurologist kind of on the down low, just trying to, you know, say, hey, what's up? But it was hard to get appointments with good doctors unless you know somebody. And luckily she knew a very important surgeon at St. John's.
Good.
He put me in touch with somebody, blah, 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 test. Misdiagnosis. They said I might have MS at one point, multiple sclerosis, and which, not great, but look, it's treatable, and you can live a long time with MS. Mm-hmm. It might affect your life, but you know, it's not a death sentence.
Sure.
Misdiagnosis here, and another test here, and turns out I got the bad news that not only did I have a brain tumor, the doctor, I asked him, I said, you know, what are we looking at? And he said, typically in these cases, I say 6 months to a year.
Holy shit.
almost 2 months to the day to the wedding. You know what I mean? Like, Christy's right there, and she's just dying.
And what does your, I mean, what does your head do? What do you think about when someone literally tells you got 6 months?
Yeah.
I mean, do they tell you, like, do you go through the stages of denial? Like, nah.
I probably did.
I would like to think that.
That's funny you mentioned that.
Yeah. I would like to think that my head would immediately go to somewhere, you know, like, I never got to see Hall & Oates live.
Uh-huh.
Or any sort of like, but it's probably just immediately about your family, right?
Yeah.
And your wife.
Yeah.
So do you immediately turn to Christy and just go, so.
Yeah.
City hall pass? Hall pass? I can do this?
That was my first thought.
Bunny Ranch? Yeah. Let's do this thing.
My first thought was, of course, holy shit. I for the first time in my life, I knew what people meant by a cold sweat. I was like sweating, right. But I was like freezing. I was like, oh, fuck. And then my next thought, and it may have been denial, it may have been head in the sand foolishness, my next thought was, that's not going to be me.
Right.
We're going to figure something out. We'll treat this. We'll do something. But it's not. I'm not going out like that.
And just so people get the severity of this, not only does this doctor give you 6 months, but I recently heard the story on the Corolla podcast that when Adam called up Dr. Drew to say, like, hey, you know, Brian's got this thing, Drew said what?
I called Corolla that day because I was going to work for him the next following Monday on his TV pilot. And had to call and say, dude, can't work for your TV pilot. Got to go in and get some chemotherapy and radiation.
Jeez.
And
how did Adam make that about him?
Let's see. Oh man, it took a couple of days. Now he was great about it. But he called Drew because Drew's his guy who knows a lot of medical shit, and we'll give it to him straight. And it's funny because I just did Dr. Drew's midday show a couple of days ago and asked him to recount, which I'd never heard. And I'm like, Drew, talk about when you found out, because I actually don't know your perspective on, you know, when you got the word that I had this horrible diagnosis and blah blah blah. And as he said to Adam, he's like, oof. That is, if it's growing, it's bad, bad news. And I'm saying, well, I think that's how they found it. I think it's grown. He goes, then it's pretty bad. And he's like, yeah, 6 months might be, you know, kind of ambitious, but, you know, 6 months is about.
Oh, God, man.
And so that's pretty much multiple opinions.
But here's
because they always say, like, oh, get a second opinion.
Yeah.
So you don't.
Well, luckily, Drew didn't call me. Drew didn't call me and give me the news.
Right.
I will say that Adam's next call, this is kind of encouraging. Adam's next call is to Dr. Bruce. I don't know if you guys know who that is.
I know him from the show.
He does. He's an ER doctor who does our show sometimes. He's actually really. Really well versed in a lot of things. As an ER doctor, you have to know a lot of shit.
Yep.
You know, you have to be very varied in your knowledge.
You have to know whooping cough, and you have to know gunshot.
You really do, which makes you sort of a renaissance man of medicine.
Sure.
And so, Adam called Bruce because he's a close friend, and he's like, Bruce, you know, Brian called me with this information, blah blah. And turns out, Bruce had a sister who was diagnosed with the exact same thing, brainstem glioma, brainstem tumor, 10 years ago. He's like, oh my god, this is reminding me. This is exactly what my sister had. And Adam's like, oh, God, well, what happened to her? How long, you know, how'd she do? How long did she last? He goes, oh, she's fine. She lives in Pasadena. You know, she's 10 years on. So,
all right, so the first sign of hope.
Yeah, it really was the first sign of hope. It was the first like,
God,
this is not the end.
And you clung to that piece of information.
I did.
So hard.
I really did.
And now you're like, all right, now I need to figure out what else goes along with how she's doing.
Yeah,
What is she eating? What is she drinking? Who's she fucking? I gotta start fucking that person.
Exactly. I'm
They've
finding
got magic
him,
juice. Yeah.
Him or her.
Him or her. It doesn't matter at this point.
And we ended up very luckily, one of the world's leading, maybe the leading, arguably, brain tumor surgeons is here in Los Angeles, Dr. Keith Black. He's at Cedars-Sinai.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a lot of people. It's just everyone we talked to who knew anything about this was like, God, Dr. Black, gotta see Dr. Black.
Okay.
We ended up knowing someone who knew someone on his team and was like, I can get you a referral, I can get you in there, you know, on Monday to see him. Went to see him. And he's a real Zen guy. He's like a real, real soft-spoken guy, which you kind of have to be. And you know, when you're delivering heavy news,
you
got to
be neutral. Well, sure, you can't just have sparklers going cancer.
Jesus, yeah, Patch right. Adam doesn't work in the oncology world.
No,
I want to ask real quick though. When you find out, they're like, we can see you on Monday. What day is it?
This is Friday.
Okay,
maybe Saturday, Friday or Saturday.
Okay, even though that's only a couple of days, I'd be losing my shit, being like, this isn't, why can't you see, like, right? Because
yes.
You don't know if 2 days is going to mean.
You're absolutely right. And that's one of the worst things about the first doctor I saw, the doctor who gave me that 6 month news. He didn't call me again for a week. Like, it was a week later that I heard from him. He's like, hey, just call and discuss treatment options. I'm like,
Can we out him so no one ever goes
there? No, actually, right. I named him in the book, and the lawyers made it was the only name the lawyers made me change.
Wow.
So in the book, he's Dr. Harold Kumar.
Well, I mean, now you say Dr. Harold Kumar, even though he's a quack, it sounds like, well, I
could
go to that doctor.
Can't fucking go to that guy.
Yeah.
So ended up with the good thing about that wait was I was actually, that was a miserable day or so, was I got the news on a Thursday, was actually already scheduled to fly up to the Bay Area where I'm from the next day for Christie's Northern California bachelorette, or excuse me, shower. My mom was throwing her a shower.
Oh, God.
So I'm going to see my family anyway. They're on vacation. They're going to come back from Tahoe to pick us up from the airport. So jeez. I got to call them and be like, sorry to ruin your vacation, but I've got cancer.
Yeah.
It's not the good kind.
No.
Oh, God.
I don't even know if I would bring that up to my family. Because
my first instinct was to not call them. I was going to like, oh, I'm going to see them tomorrow. Why would I ruin their vacation?
Right. Even vacation, past that, I don't know if I'd could ever. I mean, I just, that's like the fuck, right? I mean, like,
yes.
But no, you're like, I had to.
Well, it was my wife's dad, my future father-in-law, Don, is a very soft-spoken guy, very wise. And he was kind of listening to me discuss this with Christy, my wife, and her mom. And I'm like, you know what? I know I should call them, but I'll see them tomorrow. And I don't want to give them this horrible news over the phone, especially on their vacation with their friends.
Right.
And Don sort of just sits there and he says very soft. He's like, I think you should call your dad. And I knew if Don was telling me to call my dad, I got to call my dad.
Also, you don't know who they know and like what other connections, right? They might have some
you know
crazy,
what? You're right. You never know. You never want the news to get back to them.
Right.
That'd be the worst.
Oh, yeah. Like they're listening to the radio show. Maybe.
Oh, you mean like who to refer me to?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant like who they knew in the medical community who might like tell them.
I mean, that too.
Yeah. Also.
Yeah. Because, Lord knows you don't want someone to give them that phone call and be like, hey, sorry about your son.
Yeah.
Wait, what
I
are you talking about?
I saw his MRI come across my desk or something.
No kidding.
Probably violate HIPAA law, right? Probably
some
HIPAA law.
something like that. But it's always interesting how, like how people there is no book on how you respond to this.
Well, there's
like,
now.
and it's called Shrinkage.
Don't laugh.
And it's written by Bald Brian here.
I'm joking. You're right though. There's no right way. There's no instruction manual.
Because I mean, and I've never really talked about this on this podcast, and I know I talked to you about it while it was happening. My dad got skin cancer, pretty bad. Not just hey. Lasered off and you're good, like gotta go to chemo, gotta go to radiation. Oof. doctors telling you, hey, this may not end up well. And thank you for always responding to my emails.
Yeah,
by the
of
way.
Course, man. How's he doing?
Here's
I took a big leap asking how he's doing.
Yeah.
He passed away. I'm gonna be cutting that out.
Yeah, we will edit that here quickly. Here's a story. He fought it for about a year and a half. And I'm in Denver, Colorado. I'm walking to the Comedy Works there, the same Comedy Works where Mike August stole all the toilet paper. And
the condo.
The condo. And I get a phone call from my mom, and this is like 5 minutes before I'm about to go on stage. And I see it, and I know that my dad had a doctor's appointment that day.
Oof.
So I'm like, oh, so it's 5 minutes before I go on stage.
You're thinking about all day. It's all you're thinking about leading up to that appointment, probably.
All day. And I get the call from my mom. I say, hey. And she doesn't say hi. She doesn't say, how are you? Her first words are, he's cancer-free.
Oh, isn't that the best?
And like, I fell on my knees.
The best.
And I started blowing the feature. No, but
you didn't have to get on your knees for that.
Can't hold
easy
a moment.
Joke,
yeah, no, but
tug at the audience's heartstrings, Brad.
I fell on my knees and I just started bawling in the green room, and all the other comics are like, "What's happening?" Like they don't know. And I do
positive tears.
And I had to explain them. They'd be like, "Yeah,
no, it's good news.
This just happened." And then, of course, like. Literally, I'm wiping the tears out of my eyes, and I hear,
Please welcome,
Brad Williams. Like, fuck.
God, dude.
And they see your eyes watering. That guy's high.
Yeah,
that guy's so high right now.
I walk down on stage, and I have a joke in my act where I say, well, we're not using dwarves properly in this country because they bring so much happiness to everyone. We should give midgets to cancer patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I say the joke, and then I don't even get the punchline. I essentially do the same thing on stage and just start bawling, and then I have to look up at the audience like, yeah, you probably want to know what's happening here.
Confused.
Were they, I mean,
That's not even a point, by the way, where it's like halfway through your act and they're on your side and they're loving the show, to where like if you started to talk about something emotional, they would start cheering for you. They're so like, what the fuck? Right? There's no explanation.
Right. They're quiet. There wasn't any lead up to it or anything.
Plus,
then,
your act, I would describe as high energy.
High energy.
It's not wry. It's not sort of Hedberg-esque.
Right.
Usually tear free.
Usually. There's been several instances. And then I pretty much had to explain to the audience like what just happened.
Yeah.
And then it was amazing. And you could probably attest to this, because the community of people that go through this, whether it be positive or negative, I made a couple posts on Instagram just, hey, I'll go back to jokes in a second, but hey, this is what happened. And the outpour of positivity was unreal. And people would call and say, hey, cancer took my fill in the blank here.
You're shocked at how many people it's touched.
Yeah. But then they weren't upset. They weren't, why was your father saved and not my relative? It was more of, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Someone beat it.
Absolutely.
Someone won.
It's a galvanizing thing. Ironically, it's a galvanizing thing. It brings people together, because if you're in the fight, or your dad or your brother, whoever, your mom, you're all in the fight.
Yeah. What are the stats of people beating it? Because I'm sure we all know this table, like at least probably five people that, right?
Yeah.
But we know people that know people. It's just... But I feel like the numbers are probably devastating.
It depends on the cancer, of course, and the age. And that's actually a point I made in the book, which is we went home literally.
Just called Shrinkage, which you can get in stores. What stores?
Finer bookstores, literally Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Okay, so you could even go to aboutlastnightpodcast.com, click on the Amazon banner.
Do that shit.
And then order Shrinkage.
Absolutely.
By Bald Brian
You'd
Bishop.
You'd be remiss not to.
Yeah, there you go.
I made the point that literally, after we got the diagnosis, the 6-month diagnosis, we went home and we looked up statistics, and they were terrifying. It's like 18% of people live longer than a year or 18 months or something like that with a particular tumor. And I got scared, but then I rationalized, I think correctly, statistics can be your worst enemy, because those stats take into account everyone. Old people, infirm people,
right.
Sick people, people who don't have access to great medical care, people who don't want access to great medical care, people who live in rural areas, people who discover their cancer too late. The fact that I was a relatively healthy 30-year-old who was going to the gym every day and ate healthy and did all this, I figured I had a little better than 17% chance to live, a year or more.
Good for you to figure that out.
It made sense.
And I've heard you do other interviews where you've talked about, don't be a statistic. Don't
be your own statistic.
Yeah, be your own statistic. Well, sure, 18% of people in general, but this is just me. Yeah. I'm 100% of Bald Brian. Let's see what happens here.
Yep.
And I think that's really key, because if you start focusing on, well, only 18% or only 10%, then you lose the hope, you lose the fight, you lose the drive.
Right.
It's Like you say, it is an indicator, but it takes in so many other factors.
Yeah. And I think that can be applied. I hope it can be applied to other parts of life. Like,
sure.
If 20% of my socioeconomic group, whether it's a demographic, your race or your gender or your income level or whatever, ends up in some level of the correctional facility, 100% of me is not going to end up in the. I'm definitely not by any means going to end up there. In fact, I'm going to thrive. And don't be a victim to your. Don't ascribe the statistics to your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those are other people.
And how did your fiance, now wife, react? What did she do? Because there's so many ways that can go.
Yeah.
Yeah. What she was like, look, I mean, I don't know. Like the talk of, you have to talk about like life after you, right?
Of course. Actually, you know what's funny?
Or maybe you don't.
I don't know if we did. I don't know if we even really allowed for that possibility.
Yeah, you know what? As I said that, I was like, why would you and why do you have to?
Maybe it was part of our united front, and I think she believed almost as much as I did. I mean, she definitely had her moments, because, listen, here's a lesson for everyone going through cancer or with a friend going through cancer. The caretaker has it worse than the patient. The person who's taking care of the patient has it way worse, because they can see it all with clear eyes. They're witnessing this whole deterioration, like Christy did with me. I'm radiated. I'm on chemo. I don't know what the fuck's going on. I'm in a fog, for 2 months. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's happening. And Christy is like witnessing it and literally helping me around to the bathroom, for God's sake. I can't be trusted to walk to the bathroom on my own.
And the stress and the just anguish that the caretakers embellish you know, and just kind of take on is probably, I'm not going to say worse than the actual cancer.
I would say in ways it's worse, though. I would say, like, for me, at my worst, I was sleeping 18 hours a day. And that's great. Wow. I wanted to sleep 18 hours a day. Yeah. Christy had to be awake and had to take care of the house and had to take care of everything, medical paperwork, everything.
Yeah.
If someone you know is going through cancer treatment, carve out a little time and attention for the caretaker, too. Take her out and have sex there. That's what I'm saying.
Wait, do you give your wife a hall pass then?
That only applies to when I'm actually on chemo.
Oh, okay. Well, because that stuff wasn't working anyway. So
exactly.
Well.
Brad, I have a quick question for you. When you came out on stage and announced that news and started bawling, was there any moment in your head that was like, don't tell the real thing and say something like, I just found out Fraggle Rock is coming to Netflix.
I can use this. You know, this is a found moment.
Or were you like, stay honest.
There was a part of me as a comic that's always like, always go for the joke, like never never let them truly in.
Because you didn't plan on that happening. It just took over. No. So it's like, and I'll explain why I'm bringing this up, but I'm curious why.
There was that thought.
Yeah.
There was absolutely that thought, but then I paused for a moment and then was like, I'm not going to be able to fake it.
You got to go. Yeah, exactly. You have to be able to pull it off.
Yeah, and I'm not going to be able to do it. Like,
because there's a fear of how vulnerable do I want to seem.
Sure.
And
you think about the show, like, well, there's still a show
except
going.
There's some more people coming up, right?
Yeah, and
the dwarf cry. That was not advertised.
Sad clown.
Sad clown.
I mean, and
sad sidekick.
And just so you guys know, seeing a dwarf cry, I've caught glimpses of myself crying in the mirror before. It's not fun. It's not fun for anybody. Yeah. No one looks at a dwarf crying and goes, "Win."
Yeah. We're not going to get more candy after this. Like, in fact, it's going to disappear from our pockets.
Yeah, like maybe some voodoo doctor's like, give me the tears of the dwarf. All right. Ooka baka. Like that, like,
put
maybe
some
that's
right
happening.
Into the cauldron, right into the smoke.
Maybe that's happening.
Somebody isolate the audio of Brad saying ooka baka and somebody help me get a video camera so I can capture the ukabaka gesture that came with it. Now, I bring this up because I'm curious at how much, like, you know, Brad was like, fuck it, I'm going to be true to the moment and be vulnerable. So how much with your interactions with people, once you start sharing the news, are you like, I got to stay strong? Or are you like, I'm going to allow myself to be fucking scared and terrified?
Boy.
Or is letting those thoughts and feelings in, do you feel like you're losing if you do that? And you have to say just so mentally strong, like, I'm going to beat this all the time, but I feel like it's only human nature to inevitably at some point go, wow, man, what the fuck?
I have a few thoughts about that. Number one, the first thought as it pertains to what you asked about, which is when did you announce on the podcast, there was a lot of talk before, like, do we want to go public with this? Most people, I will not include myself as a celebrity, but people who have a public, you know, following or whatever, sure. They're very private about, you know, cancer and health stuff. You know, you often find out, like, oh, Rock Hudson had AIDS and then he died the next day. You know what I mean? Shit like that.
I know when, like, in, like, Patrick Swayze, we found out. Then he's like, wait, Patrick Swayze he's dead. What?
Exactly. You'll, like, find out about it. Yeah.
All right. Well, what news station was that? Because that seems like the worst reporting ever.
Ladies and gentlemen, Patrick Swayze, he's dead. Ghost is now real.
Welcome back to Two Quick News.
It just happened news. The thought for me, there was never any doubt. I was like, I've got to be honest. I got to be public and I got to just talk about it because I can't imagine the spiritual burden of keeping this inside, not telling people, lying about it. And then let's play this out. What if it gets worse? What if I go away for a while? You know, I get treatment. Like, what happened to Brian? He's on the show and now he's not on the show. What happens if someone sees me on the street outside of Cedars? Like, holy shit, Brian looks terrible.
Yeah.
Worse than he normally does. And so I couldn't live with that spiritual burden of trying to hide something. Plus, I didn't realize this at the time, but it came true within 24 hours, I got so fucking many emails and tweets and just people saying, pulling for you. You know, I feel like I got the news from a friend that got diagnosed. Yeah. And I was like, it really opened my eyes to the power of what we were doing at the podcast. Like, what people really, we're in their cars, we're in their ears, we're at the gym with them.
Yeah, and it's part of people's routines. I listen to the Corolla podcast and you guys are part of my routine. But before I was even a guest, I felt like I knew you guys. Yeah. And the other question I want to ask you, because this is something that from people that the families, the friends, as the person going through it, when you tell someone, what kind of reactions are best for you? Like when like how can people make you feel? Because like my dad was always like, live your life, don't change anything, don't feel sorry for me, just do your thing, mm-hmm. I'll be okay. Is that what you were going
Interesting.
Through?
Interesting. I'd say mostly yes. My number one rule that I had to remind Christy, because she's more she's a woman, she's more emotional than I am,
sure.
thankfully, and we had friends who would naturally just kind of back away, you know what I mean? They didn't say anything, but I don't think they wanted to. They were uncomfortable, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or this whole situation made them emotional or uncomfortable, whatever it was, and they just kind of drifted away a little bit.
Yeah, it's the last scene from the last episode of Seinfeld where they're all just backing up, going, "Good luck with all that."
Yeah, kind of, yes, without saying that, it was emotionally that.
Yeah,
and Chrissy got upset about certain people, you know, not being there for us, or not even that, just like, where is this? Why haven't heard from this person? You know what I mean?
Isn't it crazy how clearly that becomes?
Yes.
Just like,
it
like,
is.
Oh, wow. And now do you...
But let me finish my thought, which is I said to Christy, I said, you can't fault people for the natural reactions. Yeah. If your natural reaction is to be freaked out, I'm not upset. If you make a conscious decision, like, fuck that guy, he's got cancer, you know what I mean? Then that's maybe we have an issue of our friendship going forward.
Right.
But if your natural reaction is to be scared or freaked out or uncomfortable or emotional, I can't hold that against you. No one can hold that against you.
And I think it's a healthy mindset. And I think having a healthy mindset probably throughout the process, I mean, not to get all like spiritual and mm-hmm. but I feel like you have to stay in a somewhat clean mindset to just like get through everything. So to even start to, it's like, why am I going to spend the little energy I have, mm-hmm. Getting upset that a guy I went to fucking, summer camp with isn't sending me thank you cards.
No, you nailed it for
thank
me
you cards,
personally.
Wait, I mean,
thank you cards. Thank you. Thank you, cancer, for taking this asshole out of my life.
I've missed that section of the Hallmark. Yeah,
P.S. Why 6 months?
All right. There's birthday. There's anniversary. Oh, there's God. Sympathy. There's
thank you, cancer.
Where's the thank you for cancer section?
Oh, my God. All right. Well, you know what I meant.
I do exactly what you mean. Funny, I actually that brings up a tangential weird observation that I had, which was a friend of mine. First of all, I always get a little hesitant to preach the healthy mindset thing, the positive attitude thing, because there's fucking people who had the greatest mindset and they died. You know what I mean? And that sucks. And I hate to be the asshole who's like, just gotta have a positive. No, you don't. You gotta have a good doctor and good drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And a healthy mindset. That helped me a lot get through it. The sort of, you know, the spiritual buoying, you know what I mean? Just feeling good. But I had a good friend who gave me a guided meditation CD specifically for cancer patients. It was like
interesting
guided meditation. The woman talks to you very softly in your ear and with the music and like, and now think about this and now blah, blah. And at one point,
who was the
said,
voice? Was it a celebrity voice? Like
no. She's
Larry
she's,
King,
Sharon Stone.
It was
Morgan Freeman. Just relax. The more you relax,
Rochester, New York.
Just picture your white blood cells taking over the cancer cells and throwing them out. Like Andy Dufresne got out of Shawshank, your cancer cells will leave your
body. There are 15,000 different types of penguins and also white blood cells.
That's right. Maybe less for you.
Maybe. He gets specific. Yeah. You can pay him more to personalize.
To address your situation.
Oh,
the actual meditation person said, in the middle of her thing, she was like, and now thank your cancer. And I was like, did I hear that right?
Yeah.
And her thing was, thank it for giving you a new perspective on life and for making you realize what's really important and for making you value all these things that you now value more. And you say thank you and now you can leave, you know? And it was a very interesting backwards way to think about things. And I was like, wow, that's heavy.
That's more shocking than the Pope, like, saying sorry to the guy who shot him.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's insane. Like, thank your cancer.
Yeah.
What?
What were the things that you initially became just very aware of being grateful for and appreciative of?
You know what? The biggest thing wasn't even... It was at the end. It was when I started to get better. Spoiler alert, I got better.
You just ruined it for everybody.
We'll edit that out.
We got that out in post. Yeah.
What a shitty end of the story.
I know. Jesus. I even listened. When I started to get better, they write books called, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't sweat the little things in your life because they'll, you know, you'll waste your time worrying about, you know, these insignificant things, blah, 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 blah. Worry about big problems. Fuck that. sweat the small stuff and love sweating the small stuff. I remember when I was starting to feel a little bit better and I put a letter out or a bill or something for the mailman to take, and or, you know, put it in your mailbox, the mailman's supposed to take it. Mailman didn't take it. He left it right there. And I got pissed. I'm like, God damn it. This bill's like due soon. And we fucking, and then I thought, I stopped and thought, how nice to worry about the mailman taking a letter and not worry about if I'm going to live to see my 31st birthday, or if I'm going to, you know, live to see our first anniversary.
Yeah.
Like, sweating the small stuff is great. Don't dwell on it. Don't make it too big a part of your life.
Right.
But recognize when you have the luxury of worrying about little things. Little things are great.
It's almost looking at the problems that you have then, not the big ones, and being like, thank God,
a good problem to have.
Thank God, my biggest problem is that they're not selling the kind of Keurig tea that over at the Bed Bath and Beyond.
Absolutely.
And all I'm trying to say, Bed Bath and Beyond, is would it kill you to have the Snapple Keurigs? They're delicious. You got 29 different types of coffee. I don't drink coffee. I don't give a fuck about coffee. And you have two teas. You have green and black. No Snapple iced tea.
Yeah,
you sell them other places.
You're just pissed because one time there was a pillow avalanche and you got fucking trapped next to the comforters for 6 days.
That is true.
Could be worse.
Ever seen the movie? What was the movie with James Franco cut his arm off to get out of the mountain?
27 hours.
Brad almost did that to get out of the pillow avalanche at Bed Bath & Beyond.
I hear a pillow avalanche is playing Coachella next year. Really solid band.
But was there ever a point when you, even small things, where you hear people with like great beach views and they're like, I never even appreciate the beat, like, or like walking across the street and seeing a couple holding hands or seeing people on a bus smiling. Like,
this is going to get very sappy and very you can edit this out. This is going to get very sickeningly sweet. But Christy and I were so in love that we held hands all the time, every day. She literally had to hold my hand to help me get places. Like I said, to and from the bathroom, let alone to the car or out in the world.
Yeah.
I had to borrow her grandparents' walker for 6 months.
What was that like?
Humiliating.
Yeah,
it was very.
So the ability to walk was for sure like, oh my God. Yeah. Like
I remember the first time I didn't drive for 5-6 months. My dad and my brother flew down from the Bay Area and drove my truck back up, so I didn't have to keep moving it.
Did you ever like put in some Grand Theft Auto just to feel like you were driving a car because you missed it so much?
I mean, I was gonna say just so you can feel like you killed a hooker
again.
Jesus.
Neither of those things. But I remember the first time I drove a car again, my truck. In physical therapy, I was lucky enough to have a physical therapist, an occupational therapist, who came to our house, and she's like, well, let's go up, drive in your car, drive on the block, because you're going to have to get back to driving
first
at some
time
point.
In 5 months?
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm. I mean,
it was 4 in the afternoon. We lived kind of on a quieter street, so, you know, she was in the car with me, and we took us. It wasn't until I was ready. It wasn't like, hey, you're wobbly a little bit, let's hop in the car.
Sure, yeah.
I was doing better at this point.
Did it all come back pretty quick, or was it...
It was a little...
foreign.
A little bit. It wasn't riding the bike. It was as though you're riding the bike and you're a little bit wobbly, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I worked it out, obviously. And this is going to sound incredibly douchey, I think. I don't think I've actually ever told this story, but I honestly got emotional the first time Christy and I went to a USC football game. To tailgate with our friends. We tailgate at all the USC home games. Mm-hmm. We're big fans. We have season tickets.
Did we mention that we all went there?
Yeah.
Have we mentioned that?
Yeah. Fight on, everybody.
Oh, you went there as well?
I went there as well.
This is the first I've heard about it. It's literally the first time
we
heard
are all Trojans in this room.
Shit.
It's so nice because every now and then we get like a Taron Killam who went to UCLA, and we have to like gang up on him, and like there's a fight to the death.
When did you graduate?
When
did you finish?
Sore subject. Never graduated. I dropped out 2006 to do comedy.
Okay. Yeah, it's obviously working out for you.
Hey!
But the football games, as we all know, huge part of that school. Huge part of the tradition.
And the tailgates are unreal.
The tailgates are actually they're more fun for me in a weird way because I get to see all my friends. And,
yeah.
You know, there's especially 40,
the last
50 people.
Especially the last couple of years.
And in school, it's a huge deal. And then post-school, it's even more fun.
For sure.
Because you go back and you're, not only are you celebrating, you're doing similar activities with drinking and hanging out, but you're like seeing someone. It's a great catch-up and like, you know, reigniting friendships.
Yeah.
And
you're getting that experience 6 times a year. Whereas in college, you got it literally every day
mm-hmm.
in school. So it's, and Christy went to SC, so we didn't actually know each other, but at the time. But we've had season tickets ever since we've known each other,
right?
And so it's a cool thing. And we actually missed an entire season. I actually had to sell my season tickets to a friend because I was super sick. I was literally dying of cancer, and so I couldn't go to any games. And the first game we went back to the next year, I remember thinking I actually got a little bit emotional because, you know, when the band's there doing the national anthem, when you fly over, it's intense. A beautiful day, and the team and the uniforms is beautiful, and Christy's there and all our friends, and it's like, you know, this is something I had hoped to get back to.
And you know, that's you getting back to normal.
Yeah.
That's you truly experiencing.
Something I look forward to.
Yeah. And I'm sure when you were selling your tickets, there might have been a voice in your head that was like, I may never go to a USC game again.
The one thing I thought I would never do again was be on the radio or be broadcasting because you guys didn't know me back then, but the results of my brain tumor and the swelling and the radiation and everything, my left side was fucked. Hence the walker. I was in a wheelchair for a short period of time. Yeah. Couldn't use my left hand. Couldn't walk. And it affected the left side of my face and mouth and tongue and all that shit to the point where I was slurring my words really, really badly. If you ever go back to the archives, the Corolla Show, and listen to those 2009 shows, I was like, well, that's it. I will not be broadcasting again for the rest of my life. I've got to find something else to do.
And Adam never spoke up and was like, hey, man, clean up those vowels.
To his immense credit, he kept inviting me back
what
on the show.
And great dude.
He is an interesting guy. He's a guy. He's a man of many angles because he can be a ranty, you know, a angry guy at a lot of times. But he's a great guy with a great heart, a loyal guy, and I owe more than just my career to him. At least more than just the start. You know what I mean? He stuck by me through thick and thin. Yeah.
So you thought you were going to be done with broadcasting, and
for sure.
But again, that mindset of like. Was that maybe one of the first times where you're like, okay, now I'm starting to have to recognize things I'm going to have to give up in order to...
Yeah, it was across that bridge when I get to it situation because I was like, well, I guess broadcasting's off the table, but maybe I should never have been doing it in the first place. So I'll figure something
else
out.
Thank God the hours are... Yeah. I mean, no, but at that time,
at that point, I didn't have shit to do.
Now,
can I finish answering a question from you earlier?
Yeah, please.
Because I had another thought on when you asked... How much do you tell people about your, you know, whatever? You asked me how much do I share with people or how do I share it with people? I always have, being a podcaster, number one, is a weird thing when someone asked me today, what do you do? And I was like, I always have to pause. I go, I have to do a quick mental math where I look at the person and I'm like, does this person know what a podcast is?
Sure. Right. Almost like when you're auditioning people to take a picture for you. You're like, does this person have any fucking clue what a phone is and how to press a button?
Sure. So I'm like, does this person know what a podcast is? Will they have ever heard of the Adam Carolla Show?
Right.
Should I just, I can't say comedian because I'm not a comedian. I work in the world of comedy, but I do not consider myself a comedian.
Could you say sound effects guy?
But then it gets into like, oh, radio, what station? Every time I say radio, it's what station?
What station? It's like, well, right.
And then my next, I'm like, oh, I could say author. Author is, I'm an author, I'm a writer.
There you go.
But then I'm like, because then the next question, oh, what do you write about? I wrote a book. What's the book about? Then I got to be like,
is it the Berenstain Bears?
Do I want to fucking get into? Do I want to tell this person I have cancer? Like,
wow.
You know, so I get that. This is all within a second and a half. I don't want to see it's weird where it's like, because that means drug dealer. I was like,
You hesitate. You're always selling drugs.
Yeah. So I usually go
male escort.
A word.
Yeah. I always go, do you know what a podcast is? And if they say yes, I say what it is. If I say no, I'm like, internet radio.
Yeah, and then it's funny because when it's like when you tell people you're a comic or an actor, but if you're successful at it and if you're good at it, you want to tell people like, okay, internet radio, but then you look at him like, but it's good, but we're the number one show, on all the internet.
You're right. It's a weird thing. I never really feel the need to give the resume, what I'm saying? But the internet radio, quote unquote, does sound a little bit, oh, you're in your mom's basement. Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah, because I'm sure, Adam, you probably had this a bunch of times where we tell people that we're comedians after they say, tell me a joke, and if we don't punch them in the face, then they usually say like, oh, like, well, what else do you do? And it's like, no, just comic.
Yeah.
It's going well.
Yeah. It sustains a lifestyle.
Yeah. I'm doing okay. And you're first of all, you're great on the Corolla Show.
Oh, thanks, dude.
Yeah. Because and Adam and I know from being guests on it that it's sometimes really hard to get a word in when Corolla is ranting.
You got to time it.
Yeah.
You got to time it.
But then you have to be good with those. Like, you can't, like, if you're waiting with a line and then you finally get in, it can't suck.
It's
like,
got to be a like eight or above.
Yeah. Like, you've got to have, all right, you've got six shots in the chamber. They all have to count.
Yeah. He's driving the ship. And if you're going to speak up and go, what if we took a left? Yeah. Or what if we go that way? And
you better have a shortcut or else it's not going to go
for
well.
For sure. Yeah. And also getting the confidence to even, like, and definitely doing a podcast helps to even, for my first few times even being there, to feel comfortable to like, and then, but also at a certain point, I feel like, and I'm curious when this happened for you, when you got on the show, do you start to just go, all right, I'm here for, not to just to fill space. So you got to trust yourself to not completely fill to yourself, but like you said, like finding the times to come in, but like, now I feel like I've gotten pretty comfortable to be like, oh, you know what? If I have something really funny and Adam's about to end or he's going to finish and I'm going to interrupt or tag on to it, to have the balls to do that, because you're like, oh, I trust that this is going to be good. So at what point in the show did you go, you know what? I'm a part of the show.
Shit. I wish I had a good answer for you. I don't know. You know what? This just popped to mind, so I'll say it was December of 2006. It was our last show of the first year of the radio show. Mm-hmm. And we all knew, I don't know if you guys listened back in the radio days, but Dave Danishek was our first sidekick.
Yep.
Along with Teresa Strasser. Fat Tad was there.
Fat Tad, which he came from Kevin and Bean, didn't he?
He did come from the role of Kevin and Bean.
Yeah. And then also, for people that don't know, Adam Carolla replaced Howard Stern.
Yeah, that was 2006. You're right. When Howard went to terrestrial radio,
right?
Adam took over the West Coast markets.
Yeah. So this isn't you on some mom and pop.
Oh, I was given a chance way too early.
Yes,
I was green.
I mean, I'm sure you've heard the stories from guys that were like that. I'm sure you've heard it from Kimmel, where like they start off in Bismarck, North Dakota,
yep.
and then they slowly have to work their way. You were not only given like the number one radio market, but Stern slot.
Yeah, I was. Let's put it this way: I was prepared to do the sound effects. I was actually. I think I hit the ground running on the mic. It took a while for me to, you know, to get to the level
you had experience with.
I had no experience with it. Whereas with the sound effects, I had been listening to Stern and Loveline, where the sound effects are great, and working. And then years later, working next to Anderson at Loveline to do the sound effects, and watching and listening and learning from him. So I feel like I had that internal metronome already. So I hit the ground running with the sound effects.
Yeah. What kind of person does it take to do sound effects for a hit radio show?
I tied in the fact in my book. I tied in the fact that I had a severe undiagnosed case of ADHD growing up.
I was going
to
say,
which
I like to call it a little bit of Rain Man.
It engenders, well, for me, the symptoms for me was the interrupting, the blurting out, the sort of, you know, blurting out when you're not called upon in class, things like that.
What would you blurt out?
Fine.
The answer's early, or like
sometimes the answer's early, sometimes non sequiturs. Like I went to a Catholic school in third grade, and they're teaching us about the hierarchy of the Catholic Church. And it's like, oh, there's the Pope, and then there's the cardinals, and there's the bishops. And I yell, "Hey, that's how you spell my name!" And she's like, "Brian, get out of class!" I'd get thrown out of class all the time because I'm yelling out at nuns. I'm yelling out at people.
You know what though? That was the early days of social networking because you're like trying to introduce yourself.
Humble brag.
Kids don't know other kids' last names.
Yeah.
Just like you're Aaron or you're Kyle.
Yeah.
We don't.
You're Brian with a Y.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're like, so that day, a lot of kids would go, oh, fucking Brian Bishop.
Interesting.
That's fucking
interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah. So the blurting out, the interrupting. Once I got a little bit older and the ADHD calmed down, I still had the blurting thing, but I knew how to time it. I knew where it went and I knew when to blurt. And I blurted in the form of sound effects. Sound effects are interjections. They're ADHD butting in.
Absolutely. And I'm always amazed.
You got to slip it in.
How fast.
Learn when to blurt. A guide to podcasting.
Turning your ADHD
to co-hosting a podcast.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you're so fast.
Yeah,
I have no idea
crazy.
How you do it.
Oh,
like,
thanks, man.
And,
I have a good memory.
Yeah.
That's it.
And obviously you have like the go-tos on the Adam Carolla show. Mm-hmm. Like you have maybe like 8 drops and I'm just...
It seems like 8, but it's actually... 30 or
really?
If I went through the ones that we played on a semi-regular basis, you'd be like, oh yeah. It's more. I know it seems like that because per show,
sure.
I maybe play 8 drops, 10. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
How many do you have in front of you for a given moment? And I want to hear the process of when something happens. Uh-huh. How quickly does your brain go, oh, I want to say something about that? And is that met with, yeah, but a sound effect would be better? And then your brain's got to quickly.
Wow. Okay. What happened? It happened.
I'm asking some great questions.
It happened today.
This is not bad, Adam.
It happened. What did it happen with? It was. Adam had Sonny, his son, in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
I will almost always defer to sound effects more when there's someone, another voice in the studio, like an extra voice, because right. more voices gets too much. It gets loud and it gets,
right. gets
too
confusing,
much.
Who's
Whereas
talking,
the sound
right.
effects, everyone knows who's talking. There's only one guy who can be talking when the sound effects are playing, or right. one guy who can, quote unquote, talking yeah. when the yeah. sound effects are playing. Sonny said something today. Adam's Carolla's son.
Nine-year-old son.
Yes, his,
yeah. 9 or 8 year old son, whatever.
Like, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, 9 year old son. And he just turned 9 2 days ago. And so Adam said, oh yeah, let's say for example, is like, yeah, we were driving down the road, 50 miles an hour and Sonny. No, he was talking about how hot it was. Like, God, we got to West Hills today and it was 107. And mm-hmm. Sonny piped in, it was 109. And rather than say something that Sonny kind of snarky, that was a perfect yeah. opportunity for don't be a one-upper.
Right. So, the sound effect you played was that says, don't be a one-upper, like I said
like
before.
Like I said before.
Yeah.
That's a perfect opportunity. And plus, as soon as Sonny blurted in, I know that it's the kid. It's a kid thing to want to correct and sound more impressive.
Sure.
Like a more impressive number. So I'm like, oh, he's going to say a number that's higher. So start typing in, you know.
Now,
anticipation is a big, big, big part of it.
Yeah. And when you say typing it in, I always thought it was like a one button hit.
No. Well, I have a few hotkeys that are not very. If you saw look at my setup next time you're in the studio. You can check it out. But there's a few, but mm-hmm. I have 600 drops.
Holy shit.
In that machine that you guys see, and then another couple hundred on the other machine.
Yeah.
And so there's close to 1,000 drops I can choose from at any time.
Do you have a favorite?
A favorite? No, I don't have a favorite. I remember the first drop that I ever put in was I put in Sweet Irony, which is a Will Ferrell drop.
Sweet Irony.
From Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yeah.
And then one that I loved because Adam has a tendency to go on a bit of a ramble sometimes. You can get a bit off topic. From the movie Defending Your Life, I have Rip Torn saying, "This is damn exciting stuff." I thought that was a great drop. So
that's a great one. Like, would you ever, like, were you, once the when you first started getting to the medical tests and just really getting deep into your treatments and all mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. did you ever have any inclination to, like, when the doc comes in and goes, well, this last round of chemo wasn't so great, and you hit a soundbite that goes, and that's the way the cookie crumbles, from like Bruce Almighty or something?
No, because the sound effects are funnier, as you guys probably know, to people who know the show.
Like, right.
My app that has sound effects isn't interesting to anybody except people who listen to the show.
Sure.
So it would have been a bit of a non sequitur to the doctor.
My personal favorite drop that you do, and I've used this in conversation, is Adam will constantly bring up references that, like, he'll talk about a 1978 baseball player or like the middle linebacker for the Rams in the 80s.
Right, Jack Youngblood.
Yeah, sure. like you do. And then you all the drop goes,
who?
Yeah, and it's just perfect.
Yeah,
because
that is one of my hotkeys, because Adam so often says random stuff that no one knows. I will often have to use the who sound effect.
Yeah, it's just, it adds so much, and it's really a skill because, and Adam will back me up on this, we do morning radio shows all mm-hmm. over the country, and when there's a bad sound effects guy, I want to kill
him.
I want to just
bad.
Fucking kill him, because you're trying to tell a story and he's dropping all this set, like, fart noises and train horns and ugh.
Yeah.
I get worst. I'm like somewhere in some Burger King, Michael Winslow is just, getting really upset.
He missed his window. Winslow misses window.
Was he like a guy you looked up to?
No. He's talented. I mean, he does amazing things.
Yeah.
But,
is there like a sound guy Hall of Fame, or like a drop Hall of Fame?
I don't know,
like,
if there is, but Anderson was my... He was
Anderson
my
from Loveline.
Anderson, the sound guy, who still is the sound guy for Loveline.
Yeah.
Fred Norris, of course, for the Howard Stern Show, is the godfather and the acknowledged master. But if you were to put him side by side, Anderson always was a little better.
There's one... I think there's like one impression you have on the Adam Carolla Show.
I do?
Yes, you do. And I just want to... Because the only thing I know about this guy is from what you do, like, of him. But you do an impression of a guy named Jack Silver.
It's more of a caricature.
who was the station
program director?
The program director for when you guys were on the radio show, and you make this guy sound like the biggest idiot. Like,
well, I'm doing my job then.
Okay, good.
Mission accomplished.
Who was this guy?
You didn't know Jack?
I never met him. I don't know of him. Like, I run into K-Rock circles, but no one ever brought him up. Who is this guy, Jack Silver?
Jack Silver is a buffoon who who Peter principled. He failed his way up to success because he was program director of a terrible station that I'm told, mm-hmm. KLSX, that struck gold when they signed Howard Stern to be the LA, LA syndicate for Howard Stern.
Gotcha.
Station was number one for years, and he was the idiot who fucking woke up on third base and thought he had a triple. He's a buffoon, and when Stern left, the story's been told. You know,
sure.
History has written the story. It's obvious. And on top of that. Most I wrote about him extensively in the book. Most of the things
Shrinkage, which is available now in paperback.
Yeah, everything I wrote about. It's funny because I remember I said the lawyer made me change the name of the doctor.
Yeah,
his reasoning was, well, you know, doctors keep really good records, and if anything you said isn't true, then blah blah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, his name isn't important. I don't care. And I wrote not so flattering things about Jack Silver, and they didn't care. The lawyers didn't care, and I'm like, so we're all good with the other names? He's like, yeah, all this stuff happened. All the stuff he said actually happened, and you're not saying anything untrue.
Is there a particular example that you could give that kind of sums him up?
The one Carolla tells on the show is... Well, he told it, so I'll be brief. But Jack Silver is a horrible judge of talent. If he was a talent scout for like the NFL, he'd been fired long ago. His notes were on guests were we had Zach Galifianakis in the studio. He's like, Galifianakis has been too long. He did not like a young Zach Galifianakis. He did not like a young Joel McHale, and he did not like a young Louis C.K. This is all 2006.
Jesus.
So Jack was not only 0-3 on the and he worshipped marginal talents like Danny fucking Bonaducci and Tom Likas.
Dude.
He worshipped these marginal talents, and yet literally these titans of movies, TV, and stand-up comedy come in before they're big. So this is the true test. This is the litmus test. He's like, no, not impressed. Jack.
Wow.
You.
The Shania Twain of assholes.
I don't even know what that means, but yes.
I don't know what that means either.
He's not impressed.
Oh, that doesn't impress him much.
Yeah. Come on, man.
Are you going to cut that out in post?
Cut that out in post. Insert more of that in post.
So, Jack, that was famously Jack. He would save his best stuff for our meetings. He came in once and we were asking him what he thought about today's show, and he said something to the effect of, not bad. Could have used a little more cooch. And Teresa, the only female in the room, just put her head in her hands and was shaking.
Could have used a little more cooch. Like,
and,
dude,
what
does that even mean?
When I emailed all of when I went to write the book, I'm researching the book and I'm writing the chapter about how bad Jack is. The chapter. I emailed Angie, our former producer, Teresa, Mike Lynch, our former writer,
right.
Mike Dawson, everyone former associated with the show, and I said, hey guys. Looking for some Jack stories. Can we? And it was a 25 email chain
that's
of how awful he was.
So there
did not need a lot of prompting.
Yeah. So there could have been a whole nother book.
maybe
just for the paperback, you do like an insert, like the Jack Silver Chronicles.
You know, he's a horrible person.
So you've been on the show for how long?
Feels like forever, but it was. I started screening this show since 2000. Well, the podcast in 2010.
Okay.
The radio show starting in 2006. And I started screening calls at KROQ/Loveline 2002, I think, 2001.
Wow. Do you have a favorite Carolla moment, guest? I mean, were you starstruck? Was there somebody you met that was like, I can't? Because at this point, Carolla.
Oh, you mean?
You guys' show is so fucking big that it's like, there's nobody that won't come on and
call in.
So it's like, was there somebody that came in that you were just like.
You'd be surprised. Jeez.
Or are you desensitized?
It's funny. I'm a little desensitized.
By the way, that's a tough fucking word to say.
You're not even drinking any beer.
Yeah, I'm over here pounding the IPA.
We're going slow.
Yeah, that's
the
a
IPA.
True drinking. There should be a drinking game where it's a bunch of fucking words like that.
Yeah,
and
four syllables minimum.
Automatopoeia.
Wow. And
solid.
And so it's gonna. If there's five words, let's all pick one here. I definitely think desensitized. Onomatopoeia.
Parallelogram.
Many L's.
What you call me? And then obviously supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Anyone can slur through that, but you got to enunciate. Once you get to supercalifragilistic, it's getting that expialidocious.
Yeah, you gotta hit it smoothly. Hit those vowels.
It's tough.
So, in terms of guests, you know what? I am a little.
I love, by the way, that nobody's on board with that drinking game. That was a quick you guys gave at the time.
It requires thought. I'd rather draw cards or throw a ping pong ball.
It's good.
Too soon.
Are you guys over 30? You guys are over 30 years
old. Yeah,
that was a rule I made for myself at 30 years old, was no more drinking games. I swore off drinking games.
Wow.
Because you're just like, I just enjoy drinking alcohol.
I just enjoy drinking. Drinking is a game. Who can get drunk?
Well, what were the games?
the game of, where will I wake up tonight? Exactly. That's a great game.
That's the best thing to have in a house, man, is just drinking your house.
Oh, God, I want it so bad. Wait, no, so, but there had to be a game that you played that, like, finally go...
No!
Like, a crazy game of spoons, and you were like...
Oh, there's not a game that precipitated it. In fact,
There's another word. Add it to the game.
Precipitated.
I love a good drinking game. Loved a good drinking... Kings was great. Beer pong, flip cup, all that shit. I just, you know, I grew up. You know, I draw a line in the sand. Wow. No more drinking games.
I feel like I just saw Peter Pan fucking jerk off into a bucket, which is another thing
I stopped doing at age 30. Dressing like Peter Pan.
Which is what I think happens when Peter Pan grows up. Yep. He goes, fuck it, I'm jerking off into a bucket.
Bieber.
You could have said pay his taxes. Yeah. You could have said go to the DMV or the bank and you went Peter Pan jerking off into a bucket.
Well, because I felt
that's the best Cards Against Humanity thing ever.
Because I feel like if you're a kid, you're like you're safe about it. You're like, it's into something that I will control
I'm gonna let you dig your way out of this one, Adam Ray.
Let me finish. Whatever I come on, I know where that thing's gonna end up, whether it's a shirt, a towel, or a person, depending on how old you started all that stuff. But, you know, doing it into a bucket, that's a very carefree, I don't care about the consequences, because nobody's gonna set up a
bucket. Not my bucket.
Clearly you
Which is a great, great failed 80s sitcom.
Not my bucket.
Not in my bucket.
Starring Ted McGinley.
Oh, who's that?
Who? There it is.
Jefferson Darcy.
Jefferson Darcy. Okay, what?
Shut up. You don't know who that is.
No, Jefferson Darcy from Married with Children.
Oh.
The neighbor, Marcy Rhodes' wife.
Yeah.
Marcy nice. Darcy.
Yeah, Marcy Darcy.
Boy, what a great show.
Someone actually.
Ahead of its time.
Right?
Here's how ahead of its time. Someone found a clip of Marcy from Married with Children walking into the shoe store, and some guy looks at her and goes, "Hey, aren't you Bruce Jenner?"
Wow.
That's how ahead of its time it was.
Remember Al Bundy's Justin Darcy's organization against for like men's rights?
Yeah, was it MAD?
No, ma'am.
No, ma'am. That's right, MAD.
No, ma'am.
I love how much you guys love Married with Children. And Brad actually told me that you're a giant like trivia guy.
Totally.
Where did that start? Because
to guest real quick.
Yeah.
I'll finish that thought.
Yeah. Really quick. I love it.
I was desensitized early on working at K-Rock, working at Loveline and all that stuff. I don't get too starstruck. I get starstruck when someone important to me or important to my childhood comes in, and it's rare, and I would not consider these A-listers, but I've gotten the most excited about Larry Miller, the comedian. I loved Larry Miller. Every time he popped on screen, I didn't know who he was. I was like, that guy's the best asshole ever. And it turns out he's a sweet, sweet, sweet guy.
Great guy.
Love Larry Miller. Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses. Huge Guns N' Roses fan growing up. So when Duff came in, I was like, fucking A, Duff McKagan. Mm-hmm. Barry Zito, because I'm a big Giants fan.
Nice.
Again, not an A-list celebrity, but a fucking...
No, but athletes
huge
are...
For me.
No, yeah, that's, sure. Yeah.
The last one, Ed O'Neill from Married Children.
Love that.
Because I grew up with Married Children, and he doesn't do a lot of press.
No.
I actually sat next to Eric Stone Street on a flight from New York.
Who plays
Cam.
Modern Family.
Yeah, in Modern Family.
Right.
And we just got to chatting, blah, 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 and he's like, Ed O'Neill this. Oh, he was just on our show and showed him the picture. He's like, wow, Ed doesn't do press, so he must have really... I'm like, oh, he came in with Royce Gracie. And he's like, oh, he loves that MMA shit, so he must... The jiu-jitsu, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so that's why he came in.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Who knew?
But it was cool to me because I'm like, oh, fucking Al Bundy.
Yeah. And he's just there. And like, there's, you know, as a professional broadcaster that you can't sort of nerd out, but there's just that party that goes, just look at me and say, let's rock.
Yep. Totally.
Please.
Yeah.
Please, just do it.
Ah, the best. Tell me about Poke High. You had a question that was good.
Yeah,
just
trivia, because I feel like I love it, but I feel like it's almost like being a good high school basketball player and then transitioning to college. It's like I loved trivia growing up, and I would play in college the drinking trivia nights.
Sure.
And I still will always, if someone's like, you want to play trivia? I'm always in.
Yeah.
But I feel like to really, like I auditioned when VH1 had that trivia show. Remember the big contest?
I was on Beat the Geeks.
Is that what it was?
No, on Comedy Central. They're around the same time.
Do you remember the VH1? Yeah.
Was that the one with the teams?
Yes.
That was a great show. Hosted hosted by Andy. Fuck, what's his name? The guy from New York. The guy, the New York broadcaster and the news guy, blonde hair.
Tom Brokaw.
No.
Billy Bush.
I want to say Andy Daly, but it's not. Fuck it. Okay, keep going. Well, I derailed your story.
By the way, Mary you. Fuck Kill, Billy Bush, Tom Brokaw, Larry King. Go.
Slow down.
Kill Billy Bush, Mary Tom Brokaw, fuck, fuck Larry King. Fuck
See,
Bush.
That's how Brad will yes and anything. and that's why I like him.
Okay. Yeah.
Also, I interrupted your story. I totally derailed your story. That was bad pop.
Trivia. So what you have a, I mean, you're really good at it, yeah?
But you said you auditioned for the thing.
Okay, yeah. We auditioned for it, but we didn't go very far. Because I only know certain trivia. I know a lot of 90s stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I know a lot of obscure baseball and basketball references.
Right.
Like, ask me who was the starting center for the Miami Heat from 1989 to 1995.
Ronnie Cycling.
Damn.
I can't ask you a question you told me to ask you. Who was the starting who was the you probably this is pretty easy. I'm trying to think of one that I would know. Name one of the players traded. This is an easy one. One of the players traded for
Chris
Charles
Sabo.
For Charles
Sorry,
Barkley.
That's all, I usually always go Chris Sabo.
One of the players traded for Charles Barkley in the trade from the Suns to the 76ers.
Oh god.
Anyone?
Good Lord.
Clarence Weatherspoon?
I don't believe he was traded.
Tom Chambers?
He was not traded. He was actually on the Suns. With
yeah, he was still there.
Jeff Hornacek was the big... Was the
wow.
Big,
now, here's my follow-up question. You know, you say tomato, I say tomato. I say Hornacek. You said Hornacek.
I always thought it was Hornacek.
And when you said that, I go, oh, wow, Brian's a fucking idiot. Because Hornacek...
Get that drop.
That's the guy... That's like the guy... That's like the guy who goes Chanukah. To me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Hornacek.
Do you say foyer or foyer? Because this is in the book also.
This is a great drinking game.
Yeah.
Is it you say Hornacek? I say Hornacek. Yeah. If you say Hornacek, I also say get the fuck out of my house.
It's my podcast.
Wait, I say foyer.
Of course. It's a French word. It's a foyer.
Look at that.
Foyer
we're back. The friendship's back in business.
There you go.
Wait, now, who says foyer?
Midwest people.
Ugh.
That's God. A lot of.
As if I needed more of a reason to hate Kansas City.
They're awful. They're bad. They're bad.
By the way, Kansas City, I love you.
Yeah, and
they're bad enunciators. That's another word for your game. Enunciators.
Oh, that is a tough one.
What are you talking about? Enunciate perfectly.
Back to trivia for a second.
Yeah. Well, we each have a few questions from. Like our favorite movies to ask you,
but I want to know about him.
Yes,
like, what,
listen. Yes. All I want to do is answer trivia questions. That's the easiest
which
thing in
is,
my life.
Which was the first draft of Sheryl Crow's song. All I want to do is have some fun.
Co-written by a guy from a high school named Kevin Gilbert, who killed himself.
Jesus.
Oh, thanks for being a
autoerotic asphyxiation. Well, that's fun.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's a fun time.
Well, now it's good again.
That's a fun
time.
Yeah,
you can't totally feel bad for somebody that goes out that.
No,
telling too many loves.
By the way, that's the opening. That's the opening scene in That Ain't My Bucket. Or what was it called?
Not my bucket.
Yeah, an autoerotic. Yeah.
Did you guys know that I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
No,
I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Well, speaking of trivia.
Oh my God!
Shit.
I was
how far'd you get
obsessed with that show?
I won $100,000.
Holy shit!
Wow. Yeah. That's not three questions.
You guys
that's,
don't fucking read Wikipedia?
No.
Yeah, they both just say no.
Yeah, no. Well, wait, so when you did that, like, because 100,000 is three away from the million?
Yeah, then, 250, 500, a million.
Dude,
yeah.
That's unreal.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome.
Do you remember the question that stumped you?
I do. I remember
yeah,
the question.
Never forget that.
Which city's newspaper sponsored the first ever spelling bee in like 1904 or something.
See, at that point, it's like...
Fuck.
I mean, now, you get the book to train, right? There's like a book of questions.
You know what? There may be... You know what I did? I just went through Trivial Pursuit cards.
Holy shit.
Christy and I took a trip to Napa right before... Oh, this is where we got engaged. We got engaged, drove back and forth, and the whole time I was driving and she was reading me Trivial Pursuit
drove
questions.
From Napa to New York?
No, Napa to L.A. Oh, then once I got back to L.A., flew to New York.
Oh, okay.
How did you even think to go on that show? So your love for trivia had culminated in, you were just like, how can I love it anymore? I need to show the world that I love it.
I won't go on and on about it, but I'll briefly mention that in the book.
Okay, all I want to do is talk about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
The backstory.
Yeah.
When I was a child, my parents would go on vacation for a week or so, and they'd leave me with my grandparents. My grandparents would do what old people do, which is watch Jeopardy. And Jeopardy airs like two times a day, three times a day, and they would would watch it together, and they would give me a quarter for every question I got right, and at 50 cents for every double Love jeopardy that. Question I got right.
Another
got
great drinking right, game, by the way.
Yes, as a 9-year old, I agree. And and for the final, if I got Final Jeopardy right, that was a whole buck. And
wow.
By the end of the week, I walked away with $25-$30
Holy
of, you know,
shit,
quarters
shit.
And dollars and stuff. And
good on your grandparents for doing that. Like,
yeah,
what a
that's
great,
a real educational thing.
I mean, I've never heard of anybody doing that. And what a great way to watch TV and learn.
And what a nerdy thing to do with your fucking grandparents for
yeah,
a week.
But what else are you going to do? Listen to them try to pick kernels out of their fucking teeth?
That's a good point. That's a good point. So anyway, I had this love of trivia, which was engendered, another good word, engendered by my grandparents. And once I, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire came out in 90, when I was in college in the 90s, and was a huge hit, obviously, and
Incredible.
It was a great show.
Regis
it was a great show.
Yeah.
And when it moved to the syndicated version with Meredith Vieira, and I got word somehow, I don't remember how, they were having tryouts in San Diego. I think what they were doing was they didn't want showbiz type, so they didn't have LA tryouts. They had San Diego tryouts, and it was for Netflix Millionaire Movie Week. Fucking, I could have won $1 million, I'm convinced. Because movie trivia, between all the lifelines and everything, I could have gotten to the $1 million question. So I went down there, took the test. The way it works when you're doing a sponsored one, like Millionaire Movie Week, you got to take two tests, the movie test and the regular
test.
And
an STD test.
Oh. And the STD test, correct. And they do it on Scantron, right? Do a Scantron test in like an Indian casino.
It's like you're back
in
fourth grade.
In a theater, like the theater they do the Indian casinos.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're all sitting there, 250 people, and we're all doing the Scantron. We're all taking the test. We turn them in. And while they're grading them, they're kind of giving us the, you know, the legal stuff. Like, okay, well, now if you pass the test, you'll get called, blah, 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 blah. And they're feeding them through the machine, one test at a time, 250. 500 tests, and you hear the Scantron machine makes a little like tick tick, like every time like it gets one wrong.
Oh boy, I really wish we had Michael Winslow for that moment right there.
Yeah, I know, he's much better.
No, your
than
Scantron
I am.
Noise is pretty good.
And so you put it through, and a bad test is like, you know what I mean? Because all the little check marks that are wrong. You know, like certain ones are better than others, and everyone's kind of listening because, you know,
that's
you're
so
like, oh,
tense, by the way,
that
right?
That could be my test. That could be my test. And every once in a while, you get to a test, they just went like, and it's like, ooh, the whole audience went, like, oh. It was sweet.
That was a good one.
And I passed both tests. I got the interview with the producer, and I just explained. And I was hesitant to even mention that I was on the radio show at that point. I was hesitant to even mention what I did for a living, but I couldn't lie. I didn't have a good enough lie made up. And he's like, what do you do? I'm like, I'm on the radio. I'm the sidekick on the Adam Carolla show. And he's like, oh my God, that's because they were in San Diego at the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's amazing. Blah, blah, blah. And so they actually called me back and actually got on the show and actually became part of the show. Like Meredith brought it up to me. She's like, you're on the Adam Carolla show. What's Adam like? Because, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Awesome.
Kind of
yeah.
Yeah. And so. Because
that's great. Because as a person who loved the show, that was very interesting to, you want to get emotionally invested in the contestant. So if there's some stuff you can be like, oh man, I love Cruel.
Yeah.
I want this guy to win.
And I just got engaged. We're getting married in 6 months.
Oh,
you know,
you're feeling
thing.
Great.
Yeah, we're top
you're
of the world.
You're in a great place to play.
Top of the world.
So
the crowd was on my side.
Who was your phone-a-friend? Because I always say, I have a criteria. If you, first of all, if you don't smoke pot, you're not going to be one of my phone of friends.
Wow, that is
you're not going to be a phone
that is a
friend.
Bold
because I have a deep
bold.
I have a deep suspicion that people who have not you have to smoke a lot of pot, but have smoked pot once in your life because that lets me know that you're open to stuff, meaning also information and random facts to get into your brain.
I'm going
to
blow your mind. How many times I smoked pot in my life?
Zero times. Well, guess what, Brian?
What, we're no longer friends?
You will not be my phone friend. If the show
you should
comes
hope
back.
I'm your phone friend.
I know. It's so good.
That's funny.
Wait, so who's your phone friend?
The way it works is they make you have three, and you got to submit pictures, and you got to like submit a little bio and stuff because they want to make sure the person's not going to vomit on the phone.
Yeah, or like they don't call some guy up, and he's like, I tell you what, I love this show as much as I hate black people. You're like, oh, shit.
Get that drop. And so, and they have no restrictions on people using the computer. There's no way they could possibly, you know, regulate that.
Yeah.
So I chose, the guy I ended up going with is Mike Chaffee, who worked with the show, and he was great on the computer. He's a you know, nerdy computer guy. And so I knew he could Google shit fast.
Right.
And if I, you know, I worked out a sort of thing where it's like, I'm going to give you just the bare bones of the question that I don't know, and you're going to Google it, and you're going to give me the answer. And He Googled my answer and gave it to me, and was.
And you know what? You also have to have the person who's quickly Googling to. By the way, quickly Googling is a one-act play that I'm starring in next summer.
Fantastic!
Get your tickets at quickgoogle.com.
.co. Quickly googling.com is taken.
But yeah. You need the guy has to be a good actor and not be like. Okay, let me think
about that.
Let me just open this browser real quick.
Saying exactly what he's doing.
How tense was that studio audience when you're getting closer and closer?
Well, the way it worked was, so they tape 5 shows a day that actually are the 5 shows of the week, Monday through Friday. They tape 5 straight in a row, and that's a day's worth of shooting. I was the last show of the day. I was the Friday show at the end of the show. So I got carried over to the next day, which was Monday, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. I got carried over to the next day of shooting, which was a Tuesday or a Wednesday or whatever it was. I had originally made flight plans to come back that night thinking, well, I'll be on the show and I'll be done. So I had to change my flight plans. But at that point, I was already up to $25,000. So it wasn't a big deal for me to change my flight.
Well, I got money to burn.
This is money well spent.
Yes.
I was actually held over and the audience was great. I don't think they were quite as invested the second day, only because they didn't follow my journey, obviously, from question number one. But it was awesome, man. It was really fun. The audience was great. I even used all my lifelines. They asked the audience question, and they steered me right, obviously. So love that audience.
A great memory for sure.
It was awesome. The way it used to work on the Regis days was they flew you out there, but you had to do the fastest finger competition, which would have sunk me. That just I always fucked that up.
We used to play that in seventh grade. It was a
a computer game.
Sure.
That was a great moment.
Wait, what happened?
Fastest finger.
I was making a finger blasting joke, Paul Bryan.
I played the fastest finger game. Oh, boy. I should smoke some pot.
Open your mind.
Start now.
To seventh grade finger jokes.
They did away with the fastest finger competition,
which was a bummer.
No, it was great for me. I mean, it was great for me because I would have fucked that up. I would not have gotten past the fastest finger. If you don't get past it, they send you home. Then nowadays, you pay for your own flight out there and your own accommodations, but you're on the show guaranteed. So it's actually a better sunk cost.
Yeah, that's good.
From an economic perspective.
Hey, we need to give our audience some closure before we wrap this up on your story.
I'm still alive. Let's do some trivia.
I love that, dude. That's your next book.
Read the goddamn book. The whole actually.
No, you're right.
The end
read
of the story
book.
Is. I write about the story better than I can ever tell it. So check out the book for the end. It's pretty emotional. It involves trips to Italy and 1 year anniversaries and tears and beautiful.
How long? Yeah, and I want to know that too. Like in writing a book, how crazy of an endeavor is that, and how much
the physical
emotion,
act of writing the book.
Well, just the process. Did somebody else actually? Did you talk to somebody and they transcribed it?
I get that question all. You're the 100th person asking that question.
That's how I would think I would do it, but then I think it's always more. And this just goes back to, I mean, how writing. That's why, when we're gonna write any of our jokes or anything, it's just like it's more personal when it's coming through your hand to the pen.
Yes,
right.
I wrote the entire thing, 100%. I excerpted, that's another word, excerpted Christie's. Christie kept a blog during the whole thing, and I excerpted a couple of sections just for effect.
Did you know she was?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. The people from the show followed it. Our family followed it. Our friends. It was very helpful, actually, for a lot of people to sort of keep them updated on what's going on.
Sure. Without having to actually call you and go in and go through those awkward moments.
Dude, those phone
moments.
Calls are fucking. You have the best intentions where you're like, I'm going to talk to this person and update them. 40 minutes pass, and you're like, oh, what the fuck? Like, I can't call anyone else now.
Yeah.
The writing of the book, it is a Sisyphean effort of pushing a boulder up a hill forever. You're never done with it. The fucking paperback came out on Tuesday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like this process just keeps, it's rewarding and I love it. And I'm so incredibly glad I did it. I don't know if I could do it again.
I think there's something great about that though, because you probably know that you put every fuck. Also,
I really did.
This time, I really poured it. As far as books go, man, you can't be more. I mean, have you sat down and read it since it's come out?
I read the audiobook. Yeah, I read the audiobook, so I read it cover to cover.
Oh, so when people download the audiobook, which you can get at audible.com, which is another one of our sponsors, audible.com/ALN.
Click through Adam and Brad. I did the audiobook, and Christy actually read her parts of the blog, and Carolla awesome. Read his foreword, so there's a few more voices on there, cool. So it's actually kind of a cool experience. Actually, I think that kept it, I got a little emotional at times reading some of the stuff.
Man, like,
and you know what? Back to your earlier question about how emotional do I get still talking about it. My first book signing / reading was in New York, and I read a funny chapter, quote unquote. I read a chapter that had sort of humorous.
Jack Silver.
A little. it was my trip to the sperm bank, and it was it didn't go over that great. It was the audience wasn't. Huh. It didn't go over that great. My next book signing and every book signing afterwards, I've read a chapter about. It's about my trip to the radiation center and how you never know who you're influencing just by people watching you, mm-hmm. and it's emotional. And it's I get emotional literally every time I read it out loud at a signing, and people really respond to it. So,
yeah,
you know, people we like to make people laugh. We do it for a living, and I think people like that. But people also need to feel emotion. They need to see that there's people out there living an emotional existence.
Yeah, and it makes those. I mean, it's the whole yin yang theory where it makes the good times even better.
And back to your thing in Denver, I guarantee those people have a memory they will never forget. People go to comedy clubs, they're like, "Oh, it was a good show." Years later, they don't remember any of the jokes. I guarantee people remember that moment.
I still get messages.
That's what I'm saying.
From the people that were in that audience going, because there's a lot of people that think that it's that stand up is very systematic. It's the same show every night.
Yeah.
So they know that they got something that they're never gonna get again. Like that's never gonna happen again for me. Where I'm gonna hopefully
where
I walk on stage moments after finding out that a relative is cancer free. And
a relative, your dad.
Yeah, and so, but to back up your story, whenever I tell that story of me going up on stage, I always get something
emotional, of course.
And so, I totally believe you. And this book is great, not just if you have someone who's going through it or you're going through it yourself, which. Although it's a wonderful thing to read, and it will certainly help. Mm-hmm. But it's just a wonderful human story.
Thanks,
it's a human triumph. I mean, and I say triumph even though you still get checked up, you still take the drugs, you still
I got an infusion today. I still have the bandage on my hand.
Yeah, you have hospital garb on you right now. So, but I mean, but they say the tumor. Shrunk.
Yeah, shrunk by a little more than half. Yeah,
that's
which is
crazy.
Which is unlikely. You know, I mean, I'm not going to say it's a miracle, but it's doesn't happen in many cases.
But it's still there.
Yeah, it'll always be there. You know,
because they can't go in willing, and take it out.
Inoperable. It's in the part of the brain where the cranial nerves all meet, and it's just the real estate. If you nick something, I could forget how to breathe.
Right.
You know.
So
God willing, it'll be there for 50 years, and I'll live the rest of my life with a little dead tumor in there. That's the best case scenario.
That's unbelievable.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
Back. To finish your question, wait. I had a thought about what you said earlier. Was shit. I was gonna say something.
Chicken or beef?
I do love chicken and beef. That's a tough question. Damn it.
Were there certain? By the way, I do want to know this though. When you had to really accept for a moment that maybe it was 6 months, mm-hmm. were there like really silly things? Like I'm never gonna get to like have another cheeseburger, or like I don't know. Like I'm curious where you're. It's such a fucking fragile, vulnerable place. I can't even imagine. Thinking of, I mean, I have had a couple gnarly car accidents where I definitely should. I'm not gonna say should, but there's no reason why,
right?
That it's didn't go down differently. And then
there's a person in your place.
Yeah. Sometimes this guy just walks in and out, and I haven't yet addressed it.
I thought it was a ghost.
I haven't yet addressed it, but. I'm curious.
To answer your question, I don't know if it's silly or not. You guys can be the judge. But when I was diagnosed in early 2009, my thought was, well, hopefully I'll live long enough to see Transformers 2 and G.I. Joe.
Wait, like now G.I. Joe the movie, or you were that delusional at that point that you thought G.I. Joe was a real person?
Oh, no, my cancer, a radiation-riddled brain. It was bad times.
Yeah, but I love that, though, because I feel like that's a... natural part of the thinking at that point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. What's
to realistic goals, achievable goals.
Sure. You know, if you're a sports team fan, you're like, are they ever going to win the next championship?
This was pre the Giants winning the World Series. I was like, I guess I'll never see that happen.
Oh, jeez.
Well, your story is fucking unbelievable.
Thanks, dude.
And, I'm very thankful that you came on because I enjoy getting to know people that I have a genuine interest in and that are great dudes that I can tell from minimal exchanges and that
limited on-air interaction.
Yeah, but you know, you can just tell, man. Like even the first, like just and also I you know listen to you for so long. So, but it's man, incredibly inspiring.
Thanks, dude.
I'm going to read your book and probably text you while I'm crying.
That's Please finish about crying, but I thought of what I was going to say.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Keep crying.
Oh. Well, I'll tell you this. The only the last time I cried was at the end of Forrest Gump when I watched it on TBS because that gets me every time. And so this will probably be just as good of a cry.
Yeah.
Although it'll be tough because when Forrest finds out that he has a kid with the same name, you know, and Jenny's like, yeah, his name's Forrest. Yeah, and Forrest is like, that's fucking what? You know? Yeah. I'm paraphrasing, but it was
he
a sweet
moment.
He didn't
say that exactly.
Yeah, he was like...
I mean, Zemeckis, that was in the deep cuts of Tom Hanks going, that's fucking what?
Yeah, he goes, get two F-bombs in before we start whimpering.
Brad, I appreciate you saying that it's a good story because even if it doesn't relate to someone's life experience, I wanted to make it a good tale because back to your thing about who wrote it or, you know, did you write the whole thing yourself? Yeah, I was a creative writing major at USC.
Oh, nice.
So I fancy myself a capable writer. I took it as a badge of honor. Like my editor, the first person to even talk to about it, he's like, so now, do you need a ghostwriter? You want someone to write it with you? I was like, no, I'm going to write this book.
Yeah.
And he probably thought, oh, Christ, here's a first-time writer who insists on it.
Of course.
No, I think I wrote a decent tale.
But then there's certainly something that this is your story. This is your story. This is your family's story. Like, I think for something as personal as this, it'd be extremely difficult to put it in the hands of someone else and hoping they get the tone right.
That was my argument to the audiobook producer. Was like, it's going to sound weird if someone else is. And then I was diagnosed with cancer. It's like, you can't.
Yeah, you're not going to get the same effect.
Do we have time for some movie trivia?
You're damn right we have time for some movie trivia.
We might have to say that for next time.
Damn it.
All right, I'm going to do five right now. I don't give a shit.
Rapid fire?
All right, give it to him.
All right. These are... Oh, that's millionaire music.
Oh.
Well done. Okay, these are just like five questions from movies that I love.
We'll fix this in post.
Okay.
Oh, God. Jesus. Clearly not a sound guy. That's like a really intense like AC/DC version.
God. Well, and now that I know really how good you are at this, these are probably going to be way too easy. But well. What was the name of the coach in The Mighty Ducks?
Oh, The Mighty Ducks. That was Emilio Estevez, and he was... I don't know, actually. God damn, you couldn't have asked about Norman Dale or Coach Finstock from the fucking Teen Wolf. I don't know, man. I saw it once when I was a little kid.
Hey, can I buzz in?
Yeah.
Gordon Bombay.
Gordon Bombay!
Good call.
Gordon Bombay. All right. In the movie Willow.
By the way,
fuck.
That sound effect, by the way.
Did you Google movies Brian doesn't like?
No. Wait, how dare you don't like Willow?
Actually,
that's my people's movie.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's when Brad knew there were others.
Yeah, exactly. Others.
He held the screen like in Poltergeist. Hands on the screen. All right, keep going.
In the movie Willow, what do they call the dwarves?
He's so serious right now. I think I know this too.
Speed bumps. I have no idea.
I mean, no, but that's a pretty good nickname for dwarves now.
That's a consolation answer.
Adam, any guesses?
Pecs?
That is also correct.
Damn, look at
they
you.
Called him Pecs.
Hey, dude, what kind of a friend
this is like,
or podcast partner would I be if I didn't know your alternate universe?
We're recording this on National Best Friend Day, and Adam, you are stepping up to the goddamn plate.
Woo!
All right, here's one that's a little more a movie that everybody's seen.
Okay.
All right. Well, no, we're not done yet.
No.
By the way, that's what happens when I come.
All right. What was the name of the city in Mexico where Andy met Red in Shawshank Redemption?
I went to a wedding there. Zihuatanejo.
Zihuatanejo is correct.
Well, I stayed at La Casa
Quinta. Another word for the drinking game.
Zihuatanejo.
The what?
They say the ocean has no memory.
By the way, I've got one if you need another question.
Fire away.
What was the name in Saved by the Bell Hawaiian Style?
Don't watch TV.
What was the name of the hotel that the gang worked at? And who was the dad who ran the hotel?
I know it's...
Wait, wasn't it Kelly Kapowski's dad?
Yep. What was his name?
Mr. Kapowski?
No, it wasn't Kelly's dad.
Oh, what was the guy? Oh, it was Kelly's grandfather.
Oh, grandfather. Fuck.
His name, his last name was a thing. It.
I know what it is. It,
what?
Carosi. Right?
How dare you? No, that was the beach resort.
Oh,
this is about the Hawaiian style.
Oh, Hawaiian style.
Jesus Christ!
God damn it!
His name was Harry Bannister, and you can both go to hell. What was the name of the hotel?
I have no idea.
The Hideaway Hotel.
The Hideaway Hotel.
Love it. All right, very Hawaiian.
I got two more. I got two more. I got to do this.
All right.
In Rocky IV, Rocky drives.
Now you're in my lane. Now you're in my Batman.
Rocky drives a Lamborghini.
Right.
What does the license plate say?
Oh, fuck. That's trivia.
Now, I have multiple choice.
Right.
So, A, number one boxer. B,
nope.
Southpaw. C, champ.
Nope.
D, Adrian Nipples.
Definitely. I thought it might have been Italian Stallion. I think it's Southpaw.
That is correct.
Yeah.
It's Southpaw. And my last trivia question.
One. All right. This is my chance to go over 500. This is huge.
There you go.
Yeah.
In Adam Carolla's movie Road Hard.
Fuck. I've only seen it once.
What is the name of the last comedian that you see on screen?
That I saw on screen or that one sees on screen?
That if someone watches the entire movie,
right.
What is the name of the last comedian you see on screen?
Oh, God. He was really funny. He was really funny. He had quite a real stage presence. He was a good-looking guy, but not like pretty, like ruggedly handsome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Williams.
Yeah. That is correct. It is Brad Williams. Last comedian in the movie Road Hard at the end of all the credits.
That's right.
Because Adam didn't have room for me in the entire goddamn movie.
Yeah, but you know what? You got in there.
I did.
And it's a credit.
I did get it.
Last impression.
Brian, I can't thank you enough for coming on this.
Thanks for having me on, you guys. That's really awesome.
This was fun, and it's cool now that we've had these conversations with you. So now it's when we come back on the podcast, it's not just going to be Brian the Sound Guy. Like now we know a little bit more about your story, and I'm sure our listeners now do now too. Listen, go out, buy the book Shrinkage. Listen to the Adam Carolla Show. And
use the links or the codes for About Last Night. And,
and go get yourself a free Audible book from audible.com or click through Amazon. And Brian, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, man.
What about your Twitter?
Oh.
At Bald Brian, Brian with a Y. If you want to follow me on the old tweets there.
Follow me on the old tweets.
Pretty fucking hilarious.
And if you can think of any more drunk words, then by all means text them to all of us.
Yeah, send Brad and Adam your trivia questions. We'll do a whole trivia episode.
Oh, it's going to be good. Thanks, buddy.
Of course. Thank you, guys.
So, that's the show.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, Slicinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.